A crafty attack frustrated. Chapter 115. Behold, the dignified members of the Jewish Sanhedrin are sitting together and waiting. Waiting? What for? They have been called together by Lysias, the Roman chief captain. You know that on the previous day, this Lysias with a band of soldiers came running and had snatched Paul from the hatred and rage of the Jews just in time. He still does not know why the Jews are so enraged against Paul. Now he intends to investigate and has called the Sanhedrin for that purpose. At this time, they are waiting for the arrival of Lysias and his prisoner. They need not wait long. When all are present, Lysias comes in, followed by some soldiers who are leading Paul. The chief captain knows that Paul possesses Roman citizenship, so he is duty-bound to watch for the safety of his prisoner. For this reason, he has taken special precautions. As Paul stands before the Jewish council, he can feel the hatred which surrounds him, although no words are spoken. He sees this wild hatred in their threatening eyes and can read it in their tightly pressed lips. A perplexing stillness prevails, a stillness which is full of threatenings. No one asks him anything. Finally, Paul breaks the silence. He looks straight into the eyes of the rulers of his nation and begins, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." "Slap that fellow on the mouth! Hit him in the face!" a snappy voice calls from among the rulers. This ruler is the high priest, Ananias. He is not clothed in his high priestly clothing, therefore Paul does not know that the high priest is before him. Because of the insulting treatment, an angry red covers the face of the apostle. "God shall smite thee, thou whited wall," Paul cries indignantly. He means, "God shall punish you, you hypocrite. Why do you command that I should be smitten? What is my offense? Would you have smitten without first investigating and without a lawful reason?" We can readily understand why Paul should get angry. He does not deserve this humiliation. However, these indignant words of Paul are taken very much amiss. "Revilest thou God's high priest?" Paul is asked reproachfully. When Paul heard that he immediately takes back those vehement words. "I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest," he apologizes, "for if I had known, I wouldn't have spoken those words. God commanded us in his laws that we may not speak evil of the ruler of our people." By saying this, Paul gives this unrighteous high priest an humiliating example. Silence again falls upon them all. They are waiting for Paul to speak. Once again, he surveys the Sanhedrin. Paul knows that this assemblage is divided into two parties. The one group consists of Pharisees and the other of Sadducees. As you know, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. They did not believe in hell or heaven, in angels or devils. According to them, dead was dead. When a person died, that was the finish. There was no difference between a person or a beast. But the Pharisees did believe in the resurrection of the dead. They also believed in hell and heaven, in devils and angels. Thus, these two parties stood at enmity against each other. Paul knows this, and he makes good use of it. "Men and brethren," he calls out, "I am a Pharisee. And I am standing here because I believe in the resurrection of the dead. A great commotion is stirred upon the hearing of these words. The Pharisees cry out, "This man is innocent. He has done no evil. If it is true that a spirit or angel has spoken to him, we may not harm him, otherwise we fight against God." However, the Sadducees yell and cry, "Surely he is guilty, for he is a deceiver. No angel could have spoken to him, for angels do not exist. He is only trying to make us believe something." "Yes, angels do exist," the Pharisees say heatedly. "We say there are no angels," the Sadducees say sarcastically. Can you see the raging, hateful glances that the members of the Sanhedrin cast at each other? It will not take much, and the Pharisees and Sadducees will begin to fight together. Lysias, the Roman chief captain, sees this heated scene, and he is greatly astonished. "Are they the rulers of the Jewish nation?" A scornful grin comes upon the face of this proud Roman. He quickly calls the Roman soldiers because he is afraid the Sadducees will murder Paul in their blind rage. These soldiers immediately take Paul under their protection. Upon the beckon of Lysias, they hastily leave this noisy gathering. Soon the apostle is brought to safety within the thick walls of the Roman castle. Lysias refuses to attend any longer this disorderly meeting of the Sanhedrin. He and his soldiers leave the room. He still does not know what wrong Paul really has done. But one thing he is beginning to understand: this man is no real criminal. He is not dangerous to the Romans. He now understands that it is but a contention about their religion, and he will have nothing to do with that. Neither will he treat Paul severely. On the contrary, probably the faithful preacher can have more freedom within the castle. You can be sure that many times Paul is sad. That night, the Lord came to him and encouraged him. "Be of good cheer, Paul," so speaks the Lord, "for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also in Rome. I will keep you, and you will proclaim the gospel in Rome too." Look over there. A group of Jews are standing together. They are whispering busily with each other about something. It could be that they are Jews from Asia Minor, but we cannot say that for sure. However, it doesn't seem that they are consulting about something very good. A false glitter gleams in their eyes. What are they so busy about? Listen attentively. They are scheming a plan to murder Paul. Yes, they bind themselves under a curse. They solemnly promise to neither eat nor drink until they have killed Paul. They swear to it with an oath. They then go to a few members of the Sanhedrin and inform them of their plan. "Now you must help us," they say. "Tomorrow you must again call the Sanhedrin together and ask Lysias if he will bring Paul before the Jewish council. We will see to it that he will never appear before the council. We will kill him on the way." The members of the Sanhedrin immediately agree. Boys and girls, isn't it a shame that the rulers of the Jews are willing to help these men who bound themselves with such an oath? They should have refused emphatically. They should have disposed of this devilish proposal with indignation. But that they do not do. The Jewish conspiracy, which numbered more than 40 men, go away grinning. Oh, if it succeeds, they will kill Paul in the street while he is on the way. They cannot be silent about it. It seems that they discuss this matter as they walk onward. Probably they make more arrangements. However, they do not notice a youth who is walking close behind them, and this boy hears all their words. They pay no attention to this boy. Why should they? But this boy frightens exceedingly when he hears what their plans are. He hears that they are talking about Paul. He hears that their plans are to kill Paul. Yes, he also hears in what way they will accomplish their heinous plan. His heart begins to beat more rapidly. That will never happen, he decides quickly. Who is this youth? You can read the answer in the Bible. He is a nephew of Paul. You know that a married sister of Paul lives in Jerusalem, and this boy is a son of Paul's sister. Thus, Paul is his uncle. Do you know what this wise lad does? He goes directly to the castle or barracks of the Romans. When he arrives, he knocks on the heavy outer gate and asks the soldier who opens this gate whether he may speak to Paul. Why, yes, you may. Come inside, the Roman soldier answers. He takes the boy and brings him to Paul. Uncle, the boy says nervously, the Jews have planned to murder you. He tells everything which he has overheard from the Jewish conspirators. Thus, he warns Paul of the threatened danger. The apostle realizes that his life is in danger. If Lysias is not warned in time, the request of the Jews to bring him once more before the council will be granted. It then will be his end. Just then a Roman centurion walks by. Paul calls him and says, "Bring this young man to Lysias, the chief captain." "Come with me," the centurion says, and escorts the nephew of Paul to Lysias. The centurion tells the chief captain, "Paul called me and asked if I would bring this lad to you. He has something to tell you." Lysias searchingly looks at this youth. "Do you have something to tell me?" he asks kindly. "Yes, sir," answers the youth. Lysias takes him by the hand and leads him aside. He says, "Tell me what you have to say. No one can hear us here." "Sir," so the youth begins, "more than 40 Jews have schemed together to kill Paul. You will be asked to again bring Paul before the Sanhedrin. They will pretend that they want to question Paul. But you must not believe them, sir, for the conspirators plan to murder him on the way. They have sworn and bound themselves under a curse that they will neither eat nor drink until Paul is killed." Lysias listens to this with horror. "You are a smart chap," Lysias says to the boy, praising him. Probably in approval, he pats him upon the shoulder. "But tell me, would you like to see your uncle murdered?" "Surely not, would you?" "No, of course not, sir." "Well then," the chief captain says seriously, "you must not tell anyone what you have heard and what you have told me. Do you hear? Will you promise me that you will not talk to anyone about it?" "Yes, sir, I will not speak about it to anyone," the lad promises. "Good. You may go now, and do not open your mouth. Here." The boy left the Roman castle with a happy smile about his lips. You can be certain that this boy really kept silent. He did not speak to anyone about it. Can you also be silent if it is necessary, boys and girls? Some can never be silent or keep a secret, but they must immediately relate to their friends whatever they hear. But I would like to advise you, learn to be silent when it is necessary, for if you do not, you will experience that you yourself will suffer most from it. Do you believe that? The sun has gone down and night is fast approaching. It has become quiet in Jerusalem. The streets are empty and deserted. In those days they had no street lights, and no one would venture going on the street after sundown unless it was highly necessary. But listen, the outer gate of the Roman castle is opened, and a Roman military force leaves the stronghold. We hear the tramp of horses' feet and also the rumbling rhythm of soldiers' footsteps. What can that be? What is going on? Listen. When Lysias heard from Paul's nephew that the Jews had planned a conspiracy against the life of his prisoner, he directly called two centurions and commanded them to get ready a force of soldiers. He no longer dares to keep Paul in Jerusalem, for he knows how dangerous a Jewish uprising can be. His plans are to have Paul brought to Caesarea to the Roman governor Felix. The governor must then handle this case from this time forward. He writes a letter to Felix, wherein is written all that has taken place. How he had rescued Paul from the murderous hands of the Jews. How he had brought Paul before the Jewish council. He writes truthfully how that he is of the opinion that Paul is completely innocent. He informs the governor that he was enlightened with the fact of a dangerous Jewish conspiracy, and for that reason he is having Paul, who is a Roman, brought to Caesarea, so that Felix can try the case further. However, the bringing of Paul to Caesarea must not be done during the day. Perhaps the Jews would try to stop it with force. No, the Jews must not know of it until Paul has arrived there safely. That is why Lysias brings Paul away during the night. Hence, nobody will notice it. Do you see that Lysias is very careful? When everything is ready, a military force of 470 men leave the barracks. They have Paul in the midst. We read in the Bible that it was the third hour of the night, which is most likely 9 o'clock our time. Paul himself rides upon a mount. The Bible says a beast. Most people think this means a saddle horse. The Jews have no suspicion that Paul is being brought away secretly. The Roman military force marches the entire night, and they are far removed from Jerusalem when the dawn of morning comes. Then the 400 walking soldiers, the infantry, return to Jerusalem. It is possible they will be needed there. Only the 70 horsemen remain with Paul, and they escort him to Caesarea. The apostle arrives safely in this city. The Roman leader hands the letter of Lysias to Felix the governor, and Paul for the present is kept in the judgment hall. The Lord watched over the life of his servant. The following morning, a few members of the Sanhedrin appear before Lysias and ask him, seemingly very submissively, if he again will bring Paul before the Sanhedrin. They wish to investigate the matter carefully. Lysias smiles subtly when he hears the request of these pious hypocrites and answers, "I have sent Paul to Caesarea to the governor. He will handle this matter further." A look of rage and disappointment can be seen upon the faces of these Jewish rulers. But Nothing can be done about it. If you want to accuse Paul, you must go to Caesarea, to Felix, Lysias advises the Jewish rulers while he secretly chuckles about the puzzled faces of these lying hypocrites. They slink away without accomplishing their purpose. You can be sure they are furious. Their wicked plan is a complete failure. This sly attack upon the life of Paul is frustrated. And now, what about the conspirators? Did they die from hunger? Why, no. If their lives were in danger, a priest could discharge them from this oath. This must have happened in this case, too.